Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Welcome to our 25th, actually our 26th year, our 25th anniversary coming up on Thursday. Luke Jones is going to join us here and talk about all things trade, not trade, Zay Flowers. He's been running around out of camp where the humidity's been down and the weather's been nice. I hope it remains that way on Thursday. We have a big, big weekend here. Thursday, we're going to be at Costas from 11 until 4, celebrating our 25th anniversary. I'll be giving away basically everything. So anything that literally I have left over that are T-shirts, that are Believe in Joe signs, that are Ray 252 signs and Free the Bird signs and Baltimore Loves Cal and Wacko for Flacco and Dump Trumpy and all sorts. I have signs. I have books. I have shirts. I have hats. I have swag. Come get it. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Also, Maryland Lottery scratch-off. Somebody won $100 2 weeks ago. Window Nation also sponsor what we're doing. 866-90-NATION. They will be with us and on hand for our 25th anniversary, as will Leonard Raskin and Raskin Global. We'll be at Costas on Thursday, 11 to 4. And then on Friday, back again with maybe some remaining pieces of that, but it's a little harder at Drug City because we're going to be upstairs above the fountain in the tasting room. I'm wearing my Fountain t-shirt today. That's not for Mike Fountain, who's one of my best friends back in high school. That is the fountain where you can get a big boy milkshake on Friday. Luke Jones, I would invite you, but you're going to be at Ravens practice. And the Mets are in town. And Jack Flaherty will have made a start, we believe, on Thursday against the Blue Jays by the time we get to that. How are you? You're tallying off? You had you a hell of a day on Tuesday between Zay Flowers left and Odell Beckham right and the whole Mike Elias watch. You were underwhelmed by this, as was I. But, you know, I mean, when I'm negative about the Orioles, just me being negative about the Orioles. But this was not a bold move by the organization. This was just a move.
It was a move. I think it's a move that can still bear some fruit for them. But is it the big move that you and I talked about the possibility of occurring? You know, certainly didn't fall anywhere in the realm of Shohei Ohtani, who didn't get dealt by the Angels, and the Angels ended up being buyers. And that's part of this whole thing that we talked about for several weeks. Some teams that we talked about in terms of potentially selling either stood pat or they ended up buying themselves. And that's part of just the reality of three wild cards in each league. But in the case of Jack Flaherty, and I said to you all along, my gut was you were much more likely to see a move like this rather than seeing the Orioles swing for the fences. I mean, Jack Flaherty, someone who, you know, has got a 4.43 ERA over just under 110 innings this season. You know, kind of at first blush, when you see that, hey, it's a younger Kyle Gibson to insert into the starting rotation, but
he's the number three, number four starter. Is that what we would call him in any era?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, what's fascinating about Jack Flaherty is you look at what he did early on for the Cardinals. Go back and look at his 2019 season. He finished fourth in Cy Young Award voting. I mean, that's how great he was in 2019. He had a 2.75 ERA, just under 200 innings. I mean, he was phenomenal that year. He looked like he was going to be a star. He was going to be the next great Cardinals pitcher.
We've seen that from Chris Tillman here, and we've seen that from Miguel Gonzalez here, and we've seen
never that good. Never that good.
Fair enough.
I mean, right. I mean, like I said, this was a guy in 2019. He was 23 years old, and he had a 2.75 ERA. He had a WAR of roughly six. Six wins above a replacement. I mean, this was a guy that looked like he was going to be a future all-star, a perennial all-star, a future anchor of that rotation for the Cardinals.
Or as Harold Reynolds called him, Bob Gibson.
Yeah. But what's happened since then? He had some injuries. Certainly, he did not pitch well during the COVID season, which, we saw some weird performances. Some great players, some not so great players have seasons that were uncharacteristic. And 21 and 22, he was hurt. He didn't throw more than 78 and a third innings in either of those two seasons. So he has been healthy this year. I think when you dig into his profile a little bit more, he's striking out close to a batter an inning, but walks are higher than you'd like to see. He's given up a ton of base hits, but at the same time, we have StatCast now, and you can look at his batted ball profile. And he hasn't given up a ton of hard contact, or at least as much as what the numbers would make you think. So you're betting on a couple things here. First of all, this is a rental. The Orioles did not give up a whole lot. The players that they, of the three players that they gave up, to me, the most interesting was Zach Showalter. No relation to Buck, for anyone who was wondering. But 19 years old, an interesting arm, probably conjures some memories of when the Orioles acquired Bud Norris and threw in a young left-handed pitcher named Josh Hader, who went on to become an all-star closer. So you hope that that doesn't happen, at least for the Orioles' sake. But Drew Rom, projected to be no more than a bullpen piece for the Orioles. Cesar Prieto, where was he going to play? You know, another infielder. So they did not give up any big pieces of consequence. And I think if you look at Jack Flaherty's profile, is there some upside there that can be untapped with a change of scenery? These are not your typical St. Louis Cardinals. They're in last place. The Cardinals have been really bad this year. And defensively, they've been bad. And I think that's probably hurt Flaherty's overall numbers. It's coming off of a really good July. You know, had five best month of the season. So,
well, they're bringing a healthy guy in here that can make 8 to 10 starts the rest of the way. And as everybody on the panel of Major League Baseball Network, which I sat and glued to, and I've known Tom Verducci for 35 years, I thought Dan O'Dowd was outstanding. I mean, it was good coverage. And I mean, Harold Reynolds, little known fact, Luke, I've never said this before. I don't know that I've said this before. This view that people see on my Facebook and the condo that I lived in, I lived on the 23rd floor Harbor Court for 19 years. I lived in Harold Reynolds' condo. Harold lived in Baltimore, he lived in my condo. And I knew Harold in 1994. I know he had gotten sort of thrown out of media and back in. I thought their coverage was fantastic in a lot of ways, but I thought the insights into everything else that was going on, whether it was Verlander, whether it was Rodriguez saying, I don't want a pitch in LA, all of these angles that went into it and the possibilities of all of it. But the notion that they didn't give up much and that they didn't get much, but more than that, what they're going to get is if they make it to this bye and they get a couple of days off, they get a guy that can that's going to pitch for them in October, a guy that's going to take the ball one of those three games they need, and he's a legitimate guy that's done it before, to go along with Gibson, I guess, and to go along with, I guess it's Bradish if it's tomorrow. I mean, you hope it's Grayson Rodriguez. You hope it's Foreman, and you hope all of it. You hope Tyler Wells gets organized. But in this guy, he's a guy that's doing it right now, has done it in the past. I'm not against the deal. I really wonder, and while we're opening the whole can of things, and I know Cease rhymes with lease, and John Angelos doesn't want to hear that, but the Cease thing to me was the bigger banana to me. Not even like Verlander, who didn't want to be here, right? Rodriguez, I guess, I don't know who those 10 teams were. I mean, it's one third of the league. You pick the Dodgers. I mean, a lot of people would say they wouldn't want to pitch in Baltimore, especially when the fence was where it was, right? But maybe it's more attractive now in that way on the free agent market. But this is where I ask, if you're not going to win this year, and I don't know. I mean, do you think they're going to win the World Series, Luke?
I mean, if you're asking me the Orioles against the field, no.
Okay,
I don't.
Fair enough.
But I would say that about any team, by the
then
way.
Then who's going to be their ace next year? You'll say Rodriguez, you'll say Means, you'll say Bradish, you'll say whatever. And I would say to you, and this was a harder thing when the fence was where it was, but it's still in the American League East. They still don't really have any money that they wanted. They don't have any money. Yeah, John's a billionaire with no money. Fraud. So I don't even want to hear that. But I do want to know if the long-term plan is the long-term plan. Where are the other – because I'll hear Holiday. I'll hear – that Couser's going to be great. I'll hear that Westberg's going to settle in. I don't know where all these guys are going to play because Henderson's going to move to third and Holiday's going to be the shortstop on opening day next year or like that or by the All-Star game in their mind. Otherwise, then why don't they just throw Holiday in the deal and get Cease? So I don't want to say that they should give Holiday up for Cease. I'm not making that case. I'm making the case of, well, who's going to be the ace? And you're not going to pay to buy it historically ever because you wouldn't be the team signing Scherzer or Verlander away from the Mets in the offseason. They've never been that. They'll never be that. The fence was a big part of that, I think, in regard to one of the reasons Messina left, other than it was effed up, was it's a tough place to pitch. And every Denny Nagel and every A guy that signed in Colorado found that out too, and it hurts your feelings. I don't think you get your feelings hurt anymore in Baltimore. I just don't think John's going to pay $100 million for a pitcher on the free agent market. And I think when Rodriguez hits, I'm a free agent, are these the guys they're going to pursue in the offseason? Because this is a day when you get to bring in a pitcher under contract, right? And we went through this with football too. We're like under contract and you pick where you play versus you don't pick where you play, where the NBA has become all of that. In the offseason, is anybody going to pick to play here? And are they going to overpay, which is what the basis of doing it, to get more pitching? Because if they're not going to win this year, they're going to have all these shortstops and third basemen. Everybody's going to the Hall of Fame. Somebody's got to pitch.
Yeah, I don't disagree with a lot of what you just said. At the same time, Kyle Bradish has a better ERA than Dylan Cease, right, this year. Now, Dylan Cease has more of a track record. Dylan Cease is a really good pitcher. Don't get me wrong. He would be their ace. I'm not suggesting otherwise. However,
I'm not giving Bradish away. I'm trying to add to it.
Sure. But at the same time,
make him not our number one because he ain't a number one.
Well, okay. That's fine. Although, guy's pitching really well. I think you're selling him a little short how you just said, I guess Bradish. Bradish been their best pitcher and, you know, kind of by a wide margin, actually.
Yeah, including on Tuesday night.
So, yeah. I mean, shook off, giving up the early home runs, and it's kind of a bulldog as that outing went on. But I hear what you're saying. And one thing we have to keep in mind, though, all of these assets have value to them. You know, they even assign monetary value to prospects in terms of projecting what kind of player they're going to be, how many years of club control they have. So this, that all goes into the accounting here in terms of
Sig
figuring
Meidel's
out deals.
A scientist. I would agree with you. They have models for all of this.
But
not
every
like
team,
the old days where it was Buck and the old man and Chris Davis going in and getting money. That's over. I agree with that.
Right. And look, that doesn't, at some point in time, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, look, I'm not doing cartwheels over the Jack Flaherty deal. At the same time, I think it helps them, whether it's what he does directly or what it allows them to do with other pieces that they can shuffle. For example, I've said it, and I kind of, it felt reinforced but with the Flaherty addition. If they get Tyler Wells right over the next couple of weeks with the plan of what they're doing with him in Bowie and, you know, trying to get his mechanics adjusted. And I mean, he was their second best pitcher over the first half of the season. Arguably, at times, he was their best starting pitcher over the first half of the season. But he wasn't right. But now with Flaherty in the mix, Wells comes back in, I don't know, 3 weeks, let's say. Is he in the bullpen? Or is someone else struggling and they move that individual to the bullpen and you strengthen yourselves in that area? But it gives you another option. It gives you a higher floor with your rotation, at the very least, for the next 2 months. Jack Flaherty's going
to
be on their
pro. It's also
going
to give you 60 or 70 innings. That Wells isn't giving you right now, that you're unsure about where those innings are coming from. I think that more than anything, they gave a couple of minor leaguers away and a pitcher to get innings, to get real major league innings, which I think Jack Flaherty's going to give them. Now, I don't know whether that's going to win them the World Series in October or not. Talk that bulldog. I don't know if he's that guy, and I don't know if Bradish becomes that guy. And the innings wall for so many of these young guys is a concern almost all the pitchers they have. I mean, they wouldn't say they're concerned about Gibson or whatever, but I mean, he's old enough. His arm hasn't fallen off yet. He'll be okay. But they're concerned about all of that because they don't really know what they have in Yenny or Cano. I mean, they really don't.
Yeah, sure. I mean, no one thought Yenny or Cano was going to be an all-star. Felix Bautista, look at what his workload is and how he's, I think, 14 innings away from his season total of innings last year, and there's 2 months to go. That's why, for me, I'm much more concerned or disappointed that they didn't add another high leverage bullpen arm. And the move to me, and I was even talking to someone out at Ravens who, you know, doesn't cover the Orioles but is a baseball, big time baseball person. To me, the move was David Robertson, and he got dealt several days before the deadline. Someone who's been there, someone who's closed games, someone who's pitched in the playoffs. I would have really liked to have seen a bullpen addition in addition to what they did with Jack Flaherty. You know, was Flaherty my ideal target necessarily? No. He's what I figured they were going to do, much more likely than going and get Cease, who it really, you know, Mike Elias didn't come out and say this because you're not going to talk about another team's players and you're not going to delve into specifics, but it really felt like the White Sox were just We want Jackson Holliday. We want Jackson Holliday. We want Jackson Holliday. And the Orioles weren't willing to do that. We'll see how that plays out. And look, Dylan Cease is a really good pitcher. Is he Justin Verlander in his prime? I'm not ready to go anywhere close to there. So,
but was he going to take the ball 35 times next year and give you starts, save you money against all of that? You can play Henderson at shortstop and say, but listen, I'm not looking to give away prospects, but I'm also looking to say, you're not getting somebody else's ace with 3 years of control who's going to give you 35 starts. You better think about giving up a starting shortstop that might be in the hall of pretty good at 20. I mean, that might be what it costs to do that. Otherwise, next year, you're going to play opening day and you're going to hope that Kyle Bradish is a real ace. Hope that Grayson Rodriguez is a real ace. And if they are, you're going to win the World Series. Good for you. I mean, that's great. But they're not that right now. They're not.
Well, right now, they also have the best record in the American League somehow. So, I hear what you're saying. And I will say
I'm always ready to make it rain in October. Because you know what? It always rains in October for every franchise, right? Oh, same thing with Lamar as we get it. Well, I mean, who are they going to play in January? It's going to rain in January. They're going to fumble the ball. They're going to turn things are going to go wrong. And when that happens, are they going to have enough pitching? And and who's going to be healthy? I'm convinced they're going to hit the ball. They scored 13 runs Tuesday night. I mean, Santander's turning on the ball. Henderson's turning on the ball. At some point, I think Kowser, Westbrook, some of these guys will wake up and fall in. Mountcastle, we were all giving him away. He was going to be the throw-in on the C-steal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we were just going to give all these guys away. They have some hitters, but I am concerned long-term on a big day when they have a chance to get an ace that you're either going to grow it, and if you believe that you have it, and you can make that case to me. I mean, I listened to Mike Elias over a beer tell me that Rodriguez is going to be fine and Hall's going to be fine, and look at Bradish and look at what we've done there, and John will spend some money. We'll go buy a pitcher in the offseason no matter what. Okay. I mean, I just haven't seen that other than Ubaldo Jimenez. I haven't seen them be good at that part of it. And that's the management part and the money part. That they had one day there were guys dangling, and I'm not talking about like Eduardo for this run if he didn't want to be here or Verlander. I'm talking about something they could have done that they just could have done, and they didn't do it, and that's fine. And I hope Jackson Holliday goes to the Hall of Fame. I really do.
Yeah, and that's not to say that they won't go acquire someone else's ace in the offseason. I mean, at some point in time, I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiment. And look, it's not even for me about you must have a number one ace starting pitcher. Kansas City got to a World Series at the expense of the Orioles, and who was their ace that year? I mean, top of your head, you can't even think who it was. You remember their bullpen being unbelievable. So there are different ways of doing this, but yeah, they're absolutely going to have to continue to look at starting pitching because they don't have as much of that in their system. They have some arms in their system, but certainly they skew way more on the position player side. But Dylan Cease was one example of someone that they could try – tried to take a swing at. How serious it got, how close it got. Mike Elias said that they quote took some very big swings over the course of the last couple days leading up to the 6 p.m. deadline on Tuesday. But it comes down to it, whether we're talking about an ace, whether we're talking about some other piece they're going to need at some point in time, whether we're talking about extending someone like Gunnar Henderson, who, by the way, Tuesday night, it's looking more and more like he's starting to figure out left-handed pitching, which the rest of the league is in trouble if Gunnar Henderson really starts to learn how to hit lefties, as he's slowly but surely showing some improvement in that regard. But at some point in time, they are going to have to make a bold move. And when I say a bold move, they're going to have to make some bold moves. And they're going
to spend money to some degree.
Spending money. Whether it's spending money, whether it's making a big trade where you give up a couple guys that are going to be major leaguers and might be really good major leaguers, but you're in a position where you can pull the trigger to get a piece that you really need for the here and now. We know that they want to maintain the long-term health of their farm system. And they did that in the process of getting Fujinami, who, let's not forget about him. They acquired him recently. We'll see how he looks for the bullpen. I think there have been some encouraging signs, but there's still questions. And in the case of Jack Flaherty, he certainly raises the floor of where they are with their rotation right now. Is there some upside there that they hope to untap here? You know, he's got plenty to play for. The guy's going to be a free agent. He has pitched in some big games. He has pitched in the postseason in the past, including pitching some good games in the postseason in the past. But, you know, can he get back to being a little more consistent? I'm not saying he's going to get back to being the guy he was in 2019, who looked like a future star pitcher. But can he help them? Sure. But at the same time, this followed the pattern that we've seen to this point in the Mike Elias era, which is not really making the bold move, not making the big move, focusing on improving on the margins. You know, and that's what we saw. Heck, I thought so much, Nestor, as I was seeing all the deals come down on Tuesday, as I was continually checking my, you know, checking the phone in my pocket, and, you know, every time a notification would go off during Ravens practice, and I'm looking to see if it's the Orioles, and, you know, seeing Verlander go to the Astros, seeing some of the other moves. But I kept thinking back to last trade deadline. The Orioles trade Trey Mancini, which was anticipated. That was expected all along, but it still hurt, especially knowing that the team was, at that point, they were right around 500, but only a few games out of the last wild card spot. Remember, they
By
had
the
had
way,
that.
I looked him up the other day just to see scuffling with the Cubs, right?
Well,
like
he was just DFA'd by the Cubs, actually. So,
yeah.
So that shows right there. Orioles got a pretty good return for him. You know, and we'll see about Seth Johnson. He had Tommy John surgery, but once he's healthy, and they knew that when they got him, that's why he was available to them, that, you know, he could be a guy that fits into their rotation, say, 2 years from now. But they dealt Mancini. They dealt Jorge Lopez. We remember that Mike Elias flew to Texas to talk to the club because guys were noticeably upset. And you could understand that because they had had this fantastic July that had put them in a position where they were, you know, relevant. They were in the playoff race, whether they were a likely contender or not for, the last wild card. But I remember at that point in time thinking, and Mike Elias even said, it's liftoff from here, right? So a lot of people thought we were going to see an offseason where the Orioles were going to spend some money and go out and get a couple pieces. Not turn the payroll into $150 million overnight, but spend some money. Well, what did we see instead? They got Kyle Gibson to replace Jordan Lyles. Upgrade, but not a dramatic upgrade on paper, even though Jordan Lyles has been really bad this year. They got Adam Frazier. Upgrade over Rougned Odor, even if some people like me kind of looked at that and said, well, you have Jordan Westberg and you have Joey Ortiz and you have these other infielders. Why did you get Adam Frazier? You know, Frazier hasn't been great all around, but he has hit home runs for them. He has come through in a lot of big spots. And then you added James McCann as an upgrade over Robinson Chirinos as your backup catcher. That to me hasn't worked out quite as well. Certainly hasn't worked out offensively, but it is what it is. The point is they made moves on the margins once again. And this trade deadline, while maybe a little more upside than some of those moves I made that they pulled off in the past, still kind of reeks of that low risk, low reward or moderate reward kind of category, which is fine for the time being. But at some point in time, they are going to have to be bold. They are going to have to make a big move. Is it going to be this upcoming off season? Is it going to be next year's trade deadline? Is it going to be talking about extending Gunnar Henderson or extending Adley Rutschman or those types of moves where you want to make sure you keep some of your young stars? You know, at some point in time, they are going to have to do that. And until they do that, that question is going to linger. But I will also say, because you even said some of the things that they've never done as an organization, well, they've also never had a farm system like this. You know, they've never drafted and developed as effectively as it appears that they have here over the last few years, when you look at the sheer number of homegrown players that are on this roster right now, which they had some in 2014, you know, they've had some in the past, but, you know, not this kind of a crop of young players. So that's where, if we're going to give the players on the field, if we're going to give Brandon Hyde the benefit of the doubt in terms of they've gotten to this point, they're 25 games above 500 after the blowout win over the Blue Jays on Tuesday night, then that's where I will continue to give Mike Elias not a total pass, because I just asked some questions and maybe more so for ownership than Mike Elias even. But I will say he himself, this current era of the Orioles, they're entering uncharted territory now because the rebuild's over. They're 90%+ across the board.
Oh, the fans expect them to go get Verlander on trade day. I mean, like, we've moved We went from 0 to 100 very, very quickly here on
Sure.
expectations of the fan
So,
base, and they expect Jack Flaherty to pitch and win big ball games in October en route to a parade. That is not a pipe dream. That is, and that's going to be the expectation over the next 4 or 5 years, which is why when I'm thinking of trade day, I'm not even thinking about what can they do in 14 or 16 to win here and now, because Buck's going to be gone, Duquette's going to be gone, the old man's going to be dead, like all of that. I'm not thinking like that at all. I was thinking more like, hey, how can they steal an ace here, you know, and really fortify and move the organization forward? I guess they feel like dealing Jackson Holliday or Kowser or Westberg or Mount or whoever that package. I mean, at some point you say, look, you're not getting Holiday, but I'll give you this, that, and that. Take five other guys. And if that's not good enough to get their ace because he's under team control, I understand where the White Sox are coming
sure.
from. Right.
Well,
I mean, we had that around here when it was come time to deal a couple of our guys that were decent back in the day.
And I'll also say this much. I mean, if the Orioles were willing to talk, or if the White Sox were willing to talk about Dylan Cease, I guarantee you the Orioles weren't the only team that made a call. Now, the Orioles may have had the most attractive collection of prospects, but that also means the White Sox know that, and they're going to ask for the moon. And the one thing I will say about this is they didn't trade him to anyone else either. You know, some Keller from the Pirates, another.
Yeah, the Dodgers weren't giving up their Holiday, right? Dodgers would have loved to have
exactly,
him under control.
Exactly.
Right?
So, yeah. Right. So that's where you do look at this and say, okay, it may just be that the some of the pitchers who didn't move, and Eduardo Rodriguez is a little bit of a different case, obviously, because apparently the Dodgers had a deal in place for him and he didn't want to go to the West Coast. He had no trade clause, which is also part of this as we think back to Adam Jones 5 years ago. But, you know, you do look at some of the pieces that didn't move, and that's where, again, you're reminded of prospects are valued. And young players who are still under club control, who might be in the major leagues, but, you know, in the case of Cease or Keller or some of these other young ones, you know, they have two more years of club control. They're asking for a heck of a lot. So, you know, sometimes
Jones turned down a chance to go to Philly, right?
He did. He did.
I totally forgot about that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, so much issues happened in 31, 25 years of having the station, 32.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot about that. I also,
sure.
Who was the Canadian kid that was such a prick that they dealt? The pitcher, he was decent.
Oh, Eric Bedard?
Bedard, yeah, left.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a name I couldn't come up with. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sure. So,
that's why I forgot his name, because he was such a prick.
But hey, he got him Adam Jones. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, so you look at, I mean, you look at all these different moves. And again, I'll come back to where my real disappointment lies that I think is completely valid is not getting another bullpen arm. I think Fujinami could actually really help them. I think he might end up being their second best reliever if Cano continues to go in the wrong direction. But I would have really liked to have seen another experienced high leverage reliever like a David Robertson. And look, I'm not saying David Robertson's amazing at this stage of his career. You know, he's at the end like Verlander's at the end. But that's the piece to me that I feel like if there's something that we're going to look back on, the Orioles, whether they wilt and they don't win the division and they have to settle for one of the wild cards and then they're playing in the three-game wild card round and who knows what the heck can happen in a three-game series. I mean, you know, that's, you know, we've talked about weighing the pros and cons of having the bye versus having to play in that total coin flip. But I for me, we'll probably look back and say, should have gotten another bullpen arm, more so than bemoaning the potential of getting Justin Verlander, who, by the way, it's interesting, and I don't want to go too far off track here, but when you're looking at trade targets, you know, you see the stats, but then you start to look closer. You know, someone like Jack Flaherty at first blush, I was like, eh, not big. And I'm still, don't get me wrong, I'm still not doing cartwheels over that move, but I see enough with some of the peripheral stats to say, you know what? He might be good for them for 3 months. And you know, he's got a lot to play for. He's still young. Change of scenery, leaving the Cardinals, whose defense was bad this year. He's pitched well on the road, hadn't pitched well at home this year.
Yeah, maybe he's our Jake Arrieta. Maybe
I mean, at least for 3 months, right? I mean, he's a rental. And if he doesn't pitch well, then, you know, Drew Rahm and Cesar Prieto, they're not making or breaking your future by any stretch. I don't think those guys had a place to play other than as a role player. But in the case of Verlander, Look, he still has good numbers. He's still good. He's still Justin Verlander in terms of his mind and his heart and desire and his experience. But you start to dig into some of his numbers, strikeouts are down, walks are up, grinding a heck of a lot more than he did even last year when he was, you know, when he was had a sub two ERA in the Cy Young. So it wasn't just, you know, oh, let's get Justin Verlander. And don't get me wrong, if the Orioles had gotten Justin Verlander, I would have been just as excited as anyone. But when you look at what you would have had to have given up, which the Astros still had to give up, but you know, they're the best prospect in their system. And yes, the Mets are covering a lot of the money. You know what the Mets would have tried to do with the Orioles is, oh, we'll pay you most of Verlander's salary, but we want prospects A, B, and C. And okay, you know, you have a conversation about that, but
well, Verlander didn't want to be
Justin,
here,
so, right? There's that, and he's 40, and you know, he could fall off a cliff here very quickly. And there's the vesting option for not just next, you know, next year he's under contract, but there's a vesting option the year after for the year after that. So my point is not that I wouldn't do it. And I don't want anyone listening right now saying, oh, Luke preferred Jack Flaherty over Justin Verlander head to head. It's more complicated than that. And in the case of Verlander, digging into his numbers a little more, I had a little more of a reservation than even when you and I talked about it a couple of days ago. So we'll see how it plays out. And look, he's going back to Houston where he's familiar. And I mean, Justin,
well, now the Orioles have to go beat him in October. That's really,
and that's part
that's
of
the
it
rub
too
for me.
Sure. Sure. And that could be a big part of it. But at the same time, Justin Verlander is not putting up the same Justin Verlander numbers of even last year. So we'll see how it plays out. But
well, we'll see how it plays out when it's Flaherty versus Verlander in game one, right?
Well, you know what I mean? If it is, we know it doesn't always work out that way in terms of who's pitching when.
Right,
and all
but
this.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
sure. Sure. Well,
if we're all
this.
Sitting here believing the Orioles are going to play baseball in October, how they're going to play when they get there, and that, you know, nobody knows that, right?
Who knows?
But I
right.
think we're all of the mindset that you want them to be as strong as possible there, and there's not going to be any coast if you want the bye. So
yeah.
that's part of the game here is that there's no easy path to the bye. You have to put the foot down. You have to play every day all mm-hmm. through September. They have two West Coast trips. They have all this stuff going on. And they have just innings limits, and there's a ceiling to their pitching right now. And, you know, you hope
sure.
Means comes back. You hope Rodriguez gets on track. You hope Bradish keeps this up. You hope Wells comes back. You hope Flaherty fits in, and apparently he's a very good guy too, and that would work well. Seems like Gibson's a good guy. They seem mm-hmm. like a good group. I mean, I'm bullish on their potential.
Sure.
But I'm also like, they now have to go beat Verlander. So that's one of the things, if you don't get the guy. I mean, Cease, whatever. It doesn't, you know, you have to worry about him, but the competition got stiffer. I want to get to football. Luke is here. We're doing our 25th anniversary on Thursday and Friday. We're going to be at Costas all day Thursday, 11 to 4, giving everything away. If you don't have a copy of Purple Rain 1, you want one, come. You don't have signs, come. You want to get a free Maryland Lottery scratch-off ticket, try to win $100 or $100,000 or $10,000, excuse me, stop by. You want a great crab cake? Stop by. Our friends from Raskin Global have sent me the special mallet with the beer opener. Mr. Costas will appreciate that as well. And our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, bringing us together. Then on Friday, we're going to be at Drug City from 11 to 4, celebrating 25 years with lots of friends. There's going to be some storytelling. I'm sure there's going to be some bitching about the Orioles and complaining about the Ravens and some wonderment about how awesome Dundalk is for all those that I'm importing into Dundalk on Thursday and Friday at places like the Fountain at Drug City where I have my shirt. Luke, you spent the day. Is there anything else on baseball you want to get to? Because I want to do the Zay Flowers thing. I want to do a little Ravens here. We got a long weekend. We got the Mets coming to town, all this stuff. Have we done enough on the trade deadline?
My final quick thought. We talked a lot about Houston. We had talked about Texas. They're duking it out in the West. You know, there's going to be a division winner, and one of them is going to be a wild card. The Orioles, look, Jack Flaherty and Fujinami, it's not moving the needle dramatically, but Tampa Bay, okay, they got Savali. Is he better than Flaherty? Fine. Toronto, they added a couple pieces, including Hicks, who gave up a couple runs against the Orioles on Tuesday night. The Red Sox and the Yankees did not do a whole lot. So in terms of the division, which is still critical in terms of the first round bye, because you know the Central is going to be playing, whoever wins the Central is going to be playing in that wild card round. I think the Orioles did okay in that context in terms of the rest of the division. Also, of the five AL East teams, from what I understand, at least one source, and I don't want to cite this as the gospel, Orioles of the five AL East teams, I do believe have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. So little food for thought there in that context, not just comparing them solely to what the Astros and the Rangers did, which certainly was more robust.
Well, and the other thing is the all fold though that you do in September when you're beating each other up, that's gone
right.
now.
Right.
You know, there's no, hey, if they go 3-9 at the wrong time in September, they can F this whole thing up. They still would need the other side to be winning their tail off in other places. And to your point, the competition's not, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox of days past where you're going to see them 12 times in September the way maybe you used to. Luke, football. You've spent more of your time on football than baseball, even though we've sat here talking baseball. They allow you to come to practice. They do not allow me out there. You're the only eyes out there. The flowers thing, in the modern era, I've done 27 training camps until they haven't allowed me to go the last 2 years. I don't believe any of this, any of the Bobby Rainey, any of the third string quarterbacks great in preseason games. I haven't bought into that since I saw Michael Vick get his leg broken 20 years ago. Right? Like I don't, this is all a mystery to me. And then I go to the social media thing, and it really feels to me like all 32 of these teams have their Chad Steeles and their Michelle Andreses. And it's just one giant infomercial of gross saccharine. It's awful. And on these practice days, they just want to have a day when OBJ makes that catch that Austin Hayes made in the real game the other night. Or they just want to have that kid get knocked over and have their cameras there for Odell Beckham to do what any human would do, is pick a 4-year-old boy up and say, "Are you all right?" and make him stop crying. And that's, OBJ, he loves Baltimore.
It was sweet.
The kid holding his hand and all that. Like, I
that was sweet. It was nice. We don't need to.
That's what this is. That's what it is. But then behind that, there is Zay Flowers burned it up on July 31st. I'm expecting them to be in love with all their players this time of year. I'm expecting you to have a more discerning eye on who's in and who's out, who's winning the competition to left guard. It's so early on, but the flowers for Zay Flowers, I want to bring it to you because everybody's glowing about it. So to the point where this kid's getting a raised expectation more than any of the wide receivers that we've had. A lot of wide receivers that are first round wide receivers here, that the expectation on him starting in my mind, even in early August, like, oh, they're talking about this guy as though he's something. Is he going to get the ball 9, 10, 11 times a game? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he is their toy, as Todd Monken said.
Yeah. And I think, I don't even know if the hype is greater than it was for Bateman or for Breshad Perriman, or go all the way back to Mark Clayton or Travis Taylor, you know, talking about their first round history at wide receiver. But it's what you just said, because there is so much social media attention. And look, everything you just said, my comment to chime in would have been, all 32 teams think they're winning the Super Bowl this year. I mean, that's what you're selling this time of year. In the same way, in February and March in Sarasota, the Orioles or sell on hope, you know. I mean, that's how this works, and social media is such a colossal arm to do that now. But in the case of Zay Flowers, there is a lot of excitement, and again, is it more than some of those other wide receivers of the past? I'll give you a quick anecdote. I remember in 2015, on the eve of training camp, before Breshad Perriman hurt his knee the next day, I remember talking to a very high-ranking member of the organization. And I asked him at the time, because keep in mind, this was 6 months after Torrey Smith had signed with the San Francisco 49ers. And my question was, do you think Breshad Perriman can be as good as Torrey Smith was as a rookie, knowing that regardless of the fact that Torrey was a second-round pick, he was really productive for them his rookie year. Almost got them to a Super Bowl, if not for Billy Cundiff. But that individual, whose opinion I respect a great deal, Nestor, you know, certainly knows football. That individual told me he thought Breshad Perriman was better than Torrey Smith already. Well, now, if Breshad Perriman never hurts his knee, who knows? But that right there is a sign of what you just said. Everyone loves their players this time of year. So, understanding that, have I been impressed by Zay Flowers? I am. You know, he's, you know, when you see him at first glance, you say, oh, it's another Marquise Brown. He's only 5'9". You know, he's well under 185 pounds or whatever he's listed as. And, all of the speed, shiftiness, all those different things, but he plays with a different kind of toughness to him that you did not see with Marquise Brown that does excite me
Steve Smith
him play. Look, I mean, that comparison, and look,
well, I mean, that's all.
I'm
going
to
do that every single time.
That.
And I tell you what, if he catches
right. I mean, that
for 94 yards and looks the part, I'll believe it when I see it in the games.
Sure.
That's where I am.
Yeah, sure. And that's fair. And look, I'm still of that mind. Believe me, I've been years and I learned my lessons as a young reporter to not make too much of what happens in OTAs and not make too much about what happens in minicamp. Certainly not make what happens too much out of it in late July and early August, especially when the pads only came on Monday. But he has looked good and he does move extremely well. And he has a toughness to him that he plays bigger than his size. So I'm very much looking forward to him. I know talking to various people in the organization and even some players unprovoked, not even asked about Zay Flowers, they've brought him up. Morgan Moses on report day was just asked about the speed of the offense and the tempo and Todd Monken and just in a general question. The first thing he brought up was Zay Flowers, which to me, that said something when Odell Beckham and Nelson Aguilar were also added in the offseason. So there's some excitement there, but there will be some growing pains as well. We'll see how it plays out. I'm not earmarking this kid to make the Pro Bowl as a rookie by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that they have designs of him being a very important part of what they do from day one. So, whether that means he's going to become their bona fide number one wide receiver over the next 2 or 3 years, who knows? Again, there have been plenty of big time prospects and draft picks who don't pan out and other guys who don't look as good early on. And then they do show out and become a legitimate piece for you. So the excitement is there. Since I've mentioned him in passing, Odell Beckham, the movement, he looks healthy. I'll say that. His movement, his route running, very fluid. He made a leaping catch in the end zone on Tuesday. That was good to see, although he did drop a deep one on what was Lamar's best deep ball of the day. So a missed opportunity there. It's practice. That's going to happen.
How's Lamar doing? How's Lamar look?
I mean, what's been interesting to me is the passing game over the first 4 days of practice where they did not have the pads on. So it very much resembled OTAs and minicamp, where inherently the offense should have an advantage because the threat of contact isn't there, right? The passing game has actually looked better since they put the pads on. So to me, that's just – I chalk that up as you're making progress, learning a brand new offense. I mean, you're putting in a brand new system. This is markedly different than what they did with Greg Roman. And that doesn't mean that it's all pass happy and they're abandoning the run or anything like that. But in terms of tempo, getting up to the line of scrimmage, putting more on Lamar Jackson's plate pre-snap in terms of adjustments and making changes at the line of scrimmage and the protection and all that. So there's a lot to it. So it's been a work in progress, but I expected that. Todd Monken even said, yeah, we're not going to be as good now as we'll be come September 10th or October 14th, or certainly December and you hope January. So that's been, but one last thing on Beckham that I was mentioning, he's moving well. The routes, you see all the signs of the guy that he was at his best. My question, which I think is still to be determined, is how well will he run, not just week one, but how will his legs hold up over the course of the season? His route running and his hands, that will allow him to win and still be a productive part of this offense. But how well he runs and how well he can continue to run as we get into the season, that's where I think there's a little more unknown. That's where that to me right there is the difference of, can he be an 1100 yard receiver or is he going to be an 850 yard receiver? So, that's to be determined. And that's, I think even John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta are asking that question privately. But so far so good. He's certainly ramping
Where's
it
Bateman
up. You know, he's
this?
A veteran player. Bateman, I mean, he's still dealing with the foot a little bit. He's not practicing yet. That early indication I got going into camp was start to look for him about 2 weeks into camp. They're slow playing it right now. apparently the Liz Frank issue is fine, but he's just got some lingering soreness in the foot. You know, he had the screw removed from his foot, you know, the surgical screws that were in there for the Liz Frank surgery, but still dealing with a little bit of discomfort. So I don't think they're overly concerned yet, but at the same time, it's not nothing either, or he'd be out there. So, you know, you want to get him right. So you'll sacrifice him being on the field in late July and early August if it means he's out there and ready to go come mid-August. You know, kind of what we talked about with the whole Dobbins saga, you know, in the big picture sense. So, you know, I think overall, like I said, the offense, still a lot of work to do. There's no question about that. The defense has definitely gotten the better of the offense overall early in camp. That's not atypical anyway, but it's certainly not unexpected when you're talking about brand new offensive coordinator, new offense, new toys to that offense, you know, to use Todd Monken's word describing Zay Flowers. But I think there's still plenty of excitement, plenty of optimism because, well, short of any catastrophic injuries, every team's excited and optimistic at this time of year. And, you know, that just goes with the territory. So, you know, no sweeping generalizations or bold predictions based off of what we've seen. It's the camp's been about what I expected it to be through the first week or so.
Luke Jones doing double duty. You can find him at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet is served. He'll be in Owings Mills in the afternoons at Camden Yards over the weekends while I remain locked out and celebrating 25 years of being locked in here at WNST. We're going to be at Costas on Thursday giving away scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. Had a $100 winner at Coco's 2 weeks ago. Come on out. Get a free scratch-off. Get a crab cake. If I were you, I would get the cream spinach. I would so get the stuffed mushrooms with the imperial crab and that. We're probably going to knock a dozen jumbos down. I have my Leonard Raskin Global crab mallet with the special beer opener in the side. Our friends at Window Nation also putting it on, 866-90-NATION. I want to give a special thank you to all of our sponsors. Dennis is coming out doing the show this weekend. We have several sponsors being involved in that. I've invited the Bricks. They're not in town from Planet Fitness and our dear friends at Royal Farms as well. I passed 10 Royal Farms getting over there. Wise Markets, of course, always having wise conversations around here. All of our sponsors that have allowed us to continue to do this and Luke to continue to do this against all odds, 25 years into this. So we'll be spiking the ball for the next 6 months here, the next 25 weeks. We are going to present the 25 stories of glory here at WNST. We're going to count them down for the next 25 weeks, 25 through number one. It's going to begin a little later on in the month. There's going to be oysters involved. There's going to be a crab cake tour involved. And it all starts at Costas on Thursday from 11 to 4, and then Drug City. I got my Fountain shirt on here. That's not a Mike Fountain shirt. What is that, Lou? I'm going to have to ask George or Chuck over at the Fountain. That's not a pill, man. That's the Drug City guy. That looks like Super Mario there. And it looks like he's making a milkshake. Looks maybe as a blender in his hand. I'm not sure. Either way, they will make you a big boy milkshake over at the Fountain. You come upstairs to the tasting room on Friday between 11 and 4. And if I've not mentioned it enough, if anybody is looking for any of the old signs, and I have a stack of a bunch of them, probably 30 or 40 different signs, Terp signs, Oriole sign, Clobber Cleveland signs, Free the Bird signs, defense signs, Ray Fit 252 signs from New Orleans over all the years. A lot of paper cuts, Luke, giving these out. There'll be no paper cuts at Costas. Copies of Purple Rain 1, Purple Rain 2, shirts, hats, leftover Get Nasty shirts, Free the Bird shirts, come one, come all, to Costas on Thursday. He is Luke. He's covering sports. I'm Nestor. I don't work. I just eat crab cakes. We're WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive in 25 years. The logo's about to change.